This is Jose Merino, Editor-in-Chief of the Neurology Family of Journals. The Neurology Podcast provides practical information to neurologists and other clinicians to help them provide better care for their patients. Thanks for listening and have a great week.
This is Andy Sutherland from the University of Virginia, and I'm joined today by my friend and colleague, BJ Hicks, who is a vascular neurologist and co-director of the Comprehensive Stroke Center at OhioHealth Riverside Methodist Hospital. For this week's podcast, Dr. Hicks and I have the pleasure of speaking with Scott Mendelson from the Department of Neurology at the University of Chicago. We're going to be discussing an article recently published in Neurology titled Race Ethnic Disparities and Rates of Declination of Thrombolysis for Stroke. In this study, Dr. Mendelson and colleagues reviewed data from the American Heart Association's Get With The Guidelines Nationwide Stroke Registry to determine the prevalence of TPA treatment declination, which for the purpose of the podcast, these are our eligible stroke patients who ultimately decline treatment with thrombolysis. And importantly, in this analysis, explore some of the differences in TPA declination by race, ethnicity, and other variables. So first of all, Scott, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you, Andy. Thank you, Vijay. I appreciate the opportunity.
So just sort of get us started here in the conversation, I think it's fair to say that we know that this has been an issue, these disparities in TPA treatment rates, but also TPA declination in prior observational studies, and there are concerning race-ethnic disparities in the use and access to acute stroke thrombolysis that many of us in the field are aware of, notably among Black and African-American patients who are less likely to receive IV TPA. So Scott, just for our listeners, what are the new findings from this most recent analysis that you and your co-authors feel like add to this current understanding?
Sure. Yeah. Based on those observations you described, we first sought to determine the prevalence of declining TPA or acute ischemic stroke in a national cohort of otherwise eligible stroke patients. Then we investigated the difference in declining TPA for acute ischemic stroke by demographic variables, so including race and ethnicity. And so using over 3 years of patient data from the Get With The Guidelines Stroke Registry, we found that the rate at which otherwise eligible patients for TPA or their proxies declined treatment was fairly low at 3.7% in our study. And though this absolute rate of declining therapy was low, we found that when adjusted for factors like stroke severity or non-Hispanic Black patients, that those patients were 21% more likely to decline therapies than, say, non-Hispanic White patients. And so from this past research, we knew that Black patients are less likely than White patients to receive TPA when eligible. And our findings in this paper suggest that this disparity in part may be related to difference in declining medical therapies for acute ischemic stroke when offered.
Well, I would, again, like to send my kudos, Scott, for this very impactful topic that we're discussing today. I've got a two-part question, so bear with me here. What do you think we could take away from the stroke treatment disparities, specifically in regards to TPA declination compared to other metrics such as mode of transport, hospital arrive times, and other TPA exclusions? And specifically, you and your co-authors highlight structural racism and provider along with health system biases that likely to play a role. I would love to hear you further elaborate on these things.
Right. And I think that's sort of the crux of the issue. So one is, I would say, is that, you know, we need to continue to build and improve systems of stroke care, right? So that patients can benefit from fast arrival times, rapid evaluations, rapid treatments. That has to happen for sure. Now, you know, among the sort of race and ethnic disparities that we discovered, we also found that patients arriving via EMS were less likely to decline care, while the opposite was true for patients arriving off hours. Again, sort of arguing that there are larger systems of care that need to be worked out in hopes of reducing disparities in treatment. We know that from other studies that off-hour arrival time has been associated with longer door-to-needle times. So the suggestion there may be that addressing these existing known opportunities of improved care, such as 911 utilization, again, improving off-hour hospital resources, all these could also impact the rates at which patients decline eligible therapies. The larger implication to your question, we think, though, is that data suggests that there may be an opportunity to reduce disparities in total in care at the level of the interaction between those healthcare providers and the patients or their proxies who are involved in these conversations around acute stroke treatments. Past research has suggested that most providers, actually, of acute stroke care prefer to engage in some informed consent process with patients. Now, this is either a verbal consent process or a written conform process, but some exchange between patients or their proxies before treating with thrombolysis for acute ischemic stroke. Unfortunately, our data do not provide the detail needed to determine if that patient and provider level factors are driving this observed difference in refusing TPA therapies. I will say, since the primary audience of our paper is the providers of acute stroke care, we have an opportunity now to examine our practice patterns around informed consent for TPA and how we discuss this treatment options to patients and whether that conversation may differ between who the audience is or who we're having these conversations with. So information, how information is received by Black patients or their families may be different, and providers of acute stroke care should be prepared to recognize these differences, and hopefully we can address them accordingly.
Scott, I just want to piggyback on BJ's question. Given the fact that we're continually confronted with these disparities, and then data like this highlights the impact of structural racism, provider system level biases, whether or not this could help fuel better training for our vascular neurology fellows, our provider workforce, and cultural competency, implicit bias training, better variations in the script of that consent process that you talk about, because obviously this continues to be a major issue and the data bears it out.
Yeah, I think that one product of this or one suggestion from these data and this work can be that we need to do better to train our physicians in talking about acute stroke therapies. There's both the education side on the pre-hospital side, so making sure that patients in the community know about what their treatment options are and the importance of fast treatment times, or at least fast activation of 911 and getting to the hospital. But built into that need to talk about what the next steps are and how time-sensitive these treatments are, how helpful these treatments are, how beneficial they are to patients. So that's at the community and the patient-facing side of things. And then maybe we need to drill down on how we train both emergency medicine physicians and neurologists and stroke neurologists about their acute therapies, about how we talk about risks and benefits of therapies with patients, and particularly in the setting of the emergency department, and particularly in the setting of acute stroke, where we aren't offered some of the luxuries, say, of time or of volumes of information that can be provided in the moment in order to obtain fully informed consent for these therapies. We may have to rethink our approach to the process. Some people have described a process of informed refusal, and that the motivation should be to administer these therapies and acknowledge that patients or their families have a right to refuse, but these are standard of care and should be administered when indicated and when patients are eligible. Or some people have described a situation where informed consent process may not be necessary because this is the standard of care, because the benefits for the practice or for the treatment outweigh the benefits. I think there's a lot of discussion in this arena about what the best fit for what scenario, and it might be different for lower volume centers versus higher volume centers, centers that are driven by, say, house staff or have other models of acute care. It may differ, but we should come to some sort of understanding about what the core elements are necessary to have an informed consent process for these therapies. And the hopes, again, of sort of reducing some of these refusals, and as we suggest, maybe that would in part get at some of the disparities in declining TPA care.
Thanks, Scott, for expounding on that. I think that brings up a lot of important topics, as it relates to how we can do better in communicating with our patients about acute stroke treatment. Were there any other findings from the analysis? Obviously, this was the key finding, but were there any other findings from the analysis that you or your colleagues found surprising or noteworthy?
Yes, we found that besides race ethnic differences, we also found that women were actually more likely than men to decline TPA therapy. Our data, again, do not give us direct insight as to what may be driving this difference, but at the level of the patient, at least, this may come down to differences in risk tolerances between genders, or as with the disparity observed at the level of race and ethnicity here, with gender, there's a possibility we are noticing the impact of provider bias as well. So again, getting back to untangling what is the interactions between the patients and the providers, or the providers and the proxies, that may be driving these disparities.
Scott, you've really given us a lot of great things to consider as far as future management of all types of patients that we see in the emergency room or in the acute stroke setting. What are any other next steps that you can envision regarding reducing these inequities moving forward? I know you've given us some, but is there anything from this data that has further interested you as far as something that we could arm ourselves with education, not only at the resident and fellow level, but also with established clinicians who might be practicing for years and might be using antiquated models for consent?
Yeah, thanks for that question, BJ. So, you know, based on our findings, if we want to reduce disparities in acute stroke care, which I think we should, then we need to learn what patient and provider level factors drive decision-making in acute ischemic stroke therapies. So either through patient education, provider training, you know, the goal of improving patient-provider interactions should be towards reducing this rate at which patients or their proxies decline care. And so whether that's education and training, or rethinking the entire model of around informed consent for acute stroke therapies, I'm not sure. But I think if we can design studies to look at what patients want to hear, what families want to hear when they are presented with acute stroke therapy options, what is it the information that the physicians or the clinicians are providing in these interactions that are driving decision making, and maybe amongst ourselves as neurologists, if we can get a consensus about what we feel like this process should look like, all of that information hopefully will inform how we engage patients and their families in acute stroke therapies and potentially reduce the rate of declination of TPA, hopefully reduce the rate of disparities in acute care. So that's the possibility. That's the sort of opportunity. But it's going to take a lot of work and a lot more conversations, hopefully like this, to get us there.
Well, we will certainly be waiting for that next conversation, Scott. And to echo BJ, I think you've definitely given us and our listeners a lot to think about. These data are important. They're elucidative and they're provocative, and they should challenge us all to do better, not only in our daily practice, but in the way that we develop our systems of care to do better for all of our patients from all backgrounds. So thanks again for joining us for the podcast. This is just the tip of the iceberg. We really want to encourage our listeners to seek out the full paper. If you take care of stroke patients and you don't take a look at this full paper, you're missing out. Out in Neurology, Race, Ethnic Disparities, and Rates of Declination of Thrombolysis for Stroke. I want to thank BJ Hicks as well as Scott Mendelson for joining us for the podcast today. And we'll look forward to talking with you all again soon.
This is Stacey Clardy, your podcast editor. We love bringing you practical, relevant, and timely neurologic education around the world, wherever you are, for free. Thank you for listening, and we hope you'll continue to join us twice a week, every week. The views and opinions of the participants in this podcast do not necessarily reflect those of the journal Neurology or the AAN. Disclosures of the participants are included in the show descriptions, reached by a link on the neurology.org website.